And that is the sound of the start of another Missal for the Masses. This is the 61st Chaplains and Sisters Mortar Pod. I am your host, Gary. And this is a podcast where I review toys from the G.I. Joe, a real American hero toy line from 1982 to the present day, focusing on the O-ring toys and vehicles from 1982 through 1994 and sometimes beyond. This is also the podcast where sometimes I talk about the latest releases in G.I. Joe comics, or I talk about what's going on in my life of collecting. And I try to keep it focused a little bit on every Missal. And this Missal is the first on a new computer. I talked to my resident Geek Squad member, Apple Genius Mainframe, and he hooked me up with a new laptop. So hopefully I will be able to get rid of some issues I was circumventing with the old one, and I can move forward and do more quality content and get it all out. So thank you, Mainframe. And it's a good thing too, because I'm in trouble. I don't live in a bubble, because today I'm going to talk about 1985's Cobra Flight Pod. And also I'm going to talk a little bit about the classified offering Cobra Flight Pod. I'm going to be talking about the original release, not the Python Patrol Flight Pod from the classified line. So that also means I'll be talking a little bit about the Cobra Televiper. Now, to start off with the Cobra Flight Pod, it is from 1985. It is also lovingly known as the Trouble Bubble. And if you're going to talk about the Trouble Bubble, then you have to spell it correctly, and that's TRUBBLE. That was the, funnily enough, the alternate name listed in Creating G.I. Joe Volume 12 by Dan Klingensmith. And that's the way I spell it. The Cobra Flight Pod is an iconic vehicle, basically getting a ton of use in animation in the Sunbow series from 1985 through the movie. It is well used there, and everybody flew it. The flip side is, and what mostly I remember from informing my playtime, is the G.I. Joe comic series. And I was a latecomer to the comic in 1991. So this will come as no surprise from an earlier conversation I had here with Stephen from G.I. Joeberg, was I don't have that huge connection to the Trouble Bubble. Now, I was five in 1985, I watched the cartoon. I watched the movie when it premiered on WPIX at about 8 o'clock at night. It might have even been seven, but I remember that Wednesday night sitting down in my parents' room on their bed to watch the movie upstairs while my mom watched something downstairs. And, you know, the flight pod is huge in that opening sequence of G.I. Joe, the movie. And while it is there and it's always been in the animations and stuff, before I really get into it, I want to just let you guys know that I'm kind of feel disjointed from the rest of the community here, because I don't have that like deep-seated connection for this. And as I talk about and review it, I think by the end you'll see why. So with that, before I start really talking about the toy, let's look at the box and how it was marketed. And once again, thanks to Carson Metaxas and 3D Joes for having excellent box art for me to look at and read. On the front of the box, of course, it's Cobra Flight Pod, and in parentheses, Trouble Bubble, spelled correctly. An enemy weapon with movable machine gun, does not shoot, fits most enemy and G.I. Joe figures. You know, figure sold separately, ages 5 and up, assembly required, no tools necessary. See back panel for actual size and contents. And we have one of those wonderful explosion back portraits, probably by Hector Garrido. And this is unique because usually on a vehicle, you get a little bit of the environment in the background, but this is the explosion back, much like it was the action figure on card in 1985. So we have a Televiper piloting the trouble bubble, and in the upper right-hand corner, we have the aerial mine floating about. And I do say floating about because there is no flame effects for thrust on the aerial mine. So how is it floating in the air? That is up to you to decide. Maybe some sort of anti-gravity mechanism. Now, in the foreground, of course, the trouble bubble has the jets, you know, with the flame effects, and we have the speed lines showing the trouble bubble is rising in the painting. And also the left missile is being launched. We got a little bit of a fire effect on that. And then we also have a fire effect on the forward machine gun. The Televiper is looking out. You know, they got the Cobra sigil on the side of the jet tank. You got the Cobra sigil on top of the bubble. And, you know, he's sitting down. You know, you see his white sneakers, you know, dangling in the air. And, you know, and he's on the move, on the attack. Now the box gets flipped over and we can read about more of the marketing for the Cobra Flight Pod on the shelf in 1985. And we got Cobra Flight Pod, G.I. Joe, a Cobra Command weapon, the Cobra's ultra high-tech jet-propelled one-man flying vehicle. Insert one of the Cobra enemies into the jet-propelled flight pod for a secret spy mission, or pre-program it for special drone flight reconnaissance. Watch out, G.I. Joe. This futuristic pod is based on Cobra Command's top secret designs, including the most sophisticated technology in the Cobra weapons arsenal. And as we go around it, we got the same right side view as we did on the box in front. And we have, quote, in quotes, jet propelled, and then flight pod, see-through canopy, rudders move, super realistic detail, figure can grasp steering bars, actual size shown, machine gun swivels and elevates, removable missiles and panel, and sturdy construction for rugged play. And this was worth one half flag point. So for half a flag point, and remember, figures were one flag point, the Cobra Flight Pod's MSRP was $2.39, and that's only 10 cents more than an action figure. So if I was minding my pennies, which I was early on with my G.I. Joe collecting, what would I go for, a figure or the Flight Pod? Well, you get one flag point, and you save 10 cents. You get a character. You know, and what's on the pegs in 1985, a murderer's row of talent for the G.I. Joe and Cobra's rosters, I would probably choose a figure over this, only because I like figures. I mean, I do love vehicles, but I would rather have a figure than the flight pod. My 1985 kid self would. 1985, I had a ferret, which is right up my alley, and I also had a moray, so the flight pod was definitely not on my radar at that time. Next up, as I always do, is we will look at the blueprints. We will look at the banalities of the 16 points of what's going on with the Cobra flight pod. This may be boring for some, but I find it truly interesting and how it informs my play. So, number one is the fire control computer housing, which is essentially the little gray box that the character holds onto as they fly the Cobra flight pod. So it looks almost like one of those little binoculars that you put a quarter in, you know, when you're at like Niagara Falls or Empire State Building, maybe the Grand Canyon. You know, I'm East Coast. I haven't been to the Grand Canyon. So, and you got the two little like lenses, and behind of it, it doesn't really have much detail, but there's enough to make it look like a little bit of cockpit controls behind it. So again, like the Polar Battle Bear missile. It is your controls, your measure, your instruments are mounted essentially to the handlebars, and you know, you have a little bit sensors, which we're going to get to on another point, but that's essentially the helm of the Cobra flight pod. And you get to number two, which is the control pod, lateral hand grip firing controls. Long way of saying that it's handlebars, and there's probably levers and stuff for fingers and thumbs to shoot and control the flight pod. You know, kind of like a mountain bike. Number three, you have your shell-proof domed flight canopy. So it's shell-proof. So it's not saying it's bulletproof. It's not saying it's missile-proof. It's not saying it's laser-proof. It's shell-proof. So you might be safe from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. But essentially what it is, it's essentially a windscreen for the character. And again, to go back to the cartoon, every Cobra used a flight pod. Even Cobra adjacent people. And then I must admit, one of the favorite uses I ever saw of the Cobra flight pod was the opening to the movie where you see both Alpine and Snake Eyes flipping, you know, and grabbing it to get in. Anyways, to me, it looks most like an oversized 1982, 1983 G.I. Joe helmet. It almost makes me think of Spaceballs and Dark Helmet. We get to four, the armrest flight controls. And now this is a spot where I think the blueprints are a little misleading, is the fact that there's really no armrests inside the cockpit of the Cobra flight pod. We have some details on the right side of the seat, but there's no armrest per se. Now, the number four is pointing to the little rubbery tabs on each side of the trouble bubble, but it's not really, because what you're seeing in the blueprints is you're seeing the outside. You're seeing the details of something that would be like guarding the forearm of the Cobra agent, but on the inside, there is absolutely no detail. It's hollow because this is one of the couple rubbery parts of the Cobra flight pod. And after we get done going through this, you know, talk a little bit about the construction. So number five is the Warlock LR-3.8 laser seeking anti-tank missiles. Now, this is a pretty cool detail. I like it when they make the missiles have like a true function, and these are anti-tank. So in 1984, you have the Rattler, which is the is loosely based, or a little less loosely based, on the A-10 Thunderbolt Warthog airplane. These are anti-tank missiles. So this has a multi-purpose role, sort of like the Rattler. But obviously, I think in 1985, you're going against the Mauler, which is based on the Polish tank, which is supposed to be a light, fast tank, not to replace the Abrams. But I'm thinking, you know, if this thing's going after tanks, it's probably incredibly close to the tanks. And the only chance it has of firing these anti-tank missiles is in between reloading on an American tank. Reloading typically takes somewhere between 3 to 4 seconds, which isn't a lot of time, but it's time enough to get a missile off, especially when you only have two of them and they're already preloaded, pre-armed, whereas the tank crew has to arm their round before loading their round and then firing their round. So that is kind of an interesting detail, because I think, especially with an Abrams battle tank, which is what I would think the software package would be installed in all of G.I. Joe's tanks, like even the Mobat, that their tracking software and their targeting systems would just be like shooting these like ducks at a shooting gallery. To summarize, the anti-tank missiles, they're pretty cool. And you know what? You don't have to shoot at tanks all the time with these missiles. You know, they can fire at opposing infantry or jeeps or whatever. So there is multiple use, but calling them anti-tank makes them sound more deadly. We get to number six, which is something I started talking to very early on, is the forward range infrared targeting sensors, which are essentially mounted at the front of the handlebars. And there are two little details that look, again, like a little bit binoculars. You get to number seven, which is the hydraulically adjustable control console. And that's essentially the post that sticks in between the character's legs, and they can pull back on it to get it close to them. So to me, what that does is it means that that's the way they're going to elevate or descend their machine gun in the front. Number eight is the positive location command chair, which is the chair that the character is sitting in. It conveniently has a backpack post to keep them locked in place. It has some detail, you know, ridging to simulate it being sewn or formed. It's a nice little detail. It's molded in gray. It stands out against the white of the Cobra flight pod. It also has a hinge that attaches to the control console for elevating and de-elevating the machine gun. We get from the seat and we talk about the twin vertical thrust high bypass ratio turbofan engines. And I love the fact that they actually call them turbine fan engines. They are jets. They are not rockets like the Jump, that jet pack that's really a rocket pack. This is a true jet. You have wonderful detail on this with a nozzle, you know, with turbine blades. So you have a lot of detail on top. And then on the bottom near the nozzle, going out, you have a little more detail, you know, giving it that fin look. So it looks real. So it looks like a plausible pair of small jet engines. Now we go down to number 10 and we get the high reflex synchronized steering rudders. And this is an area where I had to replace on my Cobra flight pod because these are connected via essentially a dog bone connection. So the rudders move left or right in sync because of the little rubbery tie rod that exists between them. This was missing on my Cobra flight pod. So this was a feature I had to turn to eBay to complete my Cobra flight pod. It was also missing the missiles. So somebody had attached Rattler bombs to it. So I also had to buy the missiles. And I need this little dog bone connector. So I ended up buying a whole new backside for my Cobra flight pod. And because of that, my Cobra flight pod doesn't have all the decals anymore because some pieces have it and some pieces don't. So nice, you got the rudders that allows it to fly left or right, I guess. And then we get to number 11, the 1XM97 mini cannon. So that's cool. They're calling it a cannon. It's also referred to as a machine gun. And, you know, there's probably a laser in the cartoon because they were all lasers. And I like the fact that they don't really explain it too much because it is kind of a little unique gun. If you're talking energy weapon like a laser, it works out fine. If you're talking out like it's a machine gun, you have the console to store the ammunition and to feed it down. So it's plausible. It's not going to have a, like I said, if it's a laser, plenty of unlimited ammo. And as if I was 5 years old playing with this thing, oh yeah, it would totally be Sunbow inspired laser cannon. If I'm taking these blueprints literally like today, I would say, well, the ammunition is going to be limited to how much you can fit into the console. You know, then you go and you wonder, oh, what caliber, you know, what size. So basically I'm limiting my size to the size of the console. So I'm looking at something in the neighborhood of a 30 cal or, you know, up to a 50 cal, you know, as most a Browning machine gun, but you're not going to be able to fit a lot of BMG rounds in that console. So we get to the number 12, the motor-driven forward mini turret, which is essentially the place where the cannon mounts to the console. Now on the toy, the Canon mounts to the console and it will only swivel left or right. Now, the way it elevates and de-elevates is pushing or pulling on the console. So this is something that they would kind of rectify in the classified version, but for now, it kind of works. The other thing too, and I'll talk a little bit about the toy after this, is that how far down it is plays a part in storing and caring for the trouble bubble or display. It also leads to an issue. But, and then we go to number 13, the forward flight stabilizing ducts, which are located beneath the seat. And it's some small details. I wouldn't say they're great detail, but the ducts don't really even look too much like ducts. You have the two little rudders that it sits on the bottom, and you know, they're there, but to me, they're not really ducts because they don't look like it. I guess that's for forward propulsion, because the only other propulsion on this is to keep it airborne. So the jets are almost acting like helicopter blades. We get the engine synchronizer system, which is pointing to what I like to call the gas filler neck, that's prominent on like the Ferret, the Snowcat. It's this little cap that appears. It's where you put your gas in, your fuel in from the pterodrome. I guess it's neat that they have a little detail there that's supposed to keep the engines in line. I guess that's to make sure that they're both providing equal amounts of thrust at all time to prevent this from, you know, toppling over. In number 15, we have the arming access panel, because now we're going to be talking about the aerial mine. That's the little panel that when you remove it, it provides access to the detonator system on the aerial mine. You got like a spring behind it. You got a knob of some kind. You got some other details in there. So it's something that, you know, who's the tripwire or zap would pull this off to de-arm the aerial mine. Don't ask me how they would do it mid-flight, because again, this is an aerial mine. And then we finally get to number 16, solid propellant SNK-7 aerial mine. Now, where are they putting the solid propellant? How is the solid propellant igniting and going through? There's not a lot of room for that. The aerial mine has always broken my brain. So with that discussion out of the way, let's talk about how I'd play with it, who I'd play it with. So to pilot the Cobra Trouble Bubble is literally any Cobra action figure, any Cobra character. This is, or at least seems to be, the one of those base level Cobra instruments of destruction that is part of basic training at the Cobra terrorist camps worldwide. Simple and easy to use, effective. So if you're looking for anybody to exclude, maybe the lowest level of Cobra infantrymen, but you know, Cobra officer, Vipers, you know, maybe, you know, the specialty Vipers you're not going to have on the Cobra Trouble Bubble, you know, maybe not a Toxo Viper. And it is an interesting choice to use the Televiper for the box art of the Cobra Flight Pod, because normally I would think that the telecommunications officer in a patrol would be with the patrol. But then again, maybe Cobra Commander wants Johnny on the spot news, so he's going to send the Televiper out for reconnaissance. So that kind of works. But, you know, not going to put a Neil in there or a Hydro Viper. But again, I would say that the Cobra Trouble Bubble, the Cobra Flight Pod, is one of those entry level, you get basic training at the Cobra terrorist camps and you get to be Flight Pod certified. Now, what would I use the Trouble Bubble for in play? Well, obviously, you know, you got the reconnaissance that I just mentioned. Not too much for attack. Not really, I would say, forward armament, much like you're getting shot at. You're literally getting shot at. And if you're getting shot at from the ground, you have no coverage on the ground. In some ways, it is form follows function, and it seems to mimic something somewhat kind of realistic with how it would be in the real world, because you would want something as light as possible to be hovering over. The aerial mines. Now, the aerial mines for me would be something that would be you place on the ground and then pop up. So it would be sitting on the ground and then you'd hit the pop-up button and it would fly up. Now, the Cobra Flypod has also the unique feature that the aerial mine plugs into that backpack peg and could be seated in the flight pod like a drone, like the Claw. However, it doesn't look good or doesn't really make sense. I'm not a huge fan of that. I think that would be rather wasteful to lose a flight pod just for the sake of using it as a mine. And at that point, if you're using the mine inside the flight pod, then the whole flight pod's become sacrificial as part of the mine. It makes more sense to me to place the mine on the ground and then as a dragonfly or locust or retaliator fly overhead, it pops up. Not so much, let's say, a Sky Striker or a Conquest, because those guys are going to be fast movers. You know, I think it'd probably be most effective with the G.I. Joe Falcon Glider. So I'm not a huge fan of the drone aspect. It also doesn't help that the aerial mine really wasn't used in any media, so that the only source of play for the aerial mine is truly your imagination. Now, how I would use this totally, well, I do have something in my head I call Destro's Disasters, Mindbenders, Mess Ups, and those are, I reserve that category for vehicles that I don't think are scientifically possible. Maybe scientifically probable, but you know, they're more on the extreme end of Cobra's bleeding edge technology of their weaponry. And to me, the Cobra Flight Pod, unfortunately, falls into that. I would rather have a Cobra jetpack than a flight pod. Now, with its iconic use in animation, it would be amongst most people to be like, well, why wouldn't you want a flight pod? They're awesome. And I guess in that sense, I can understand why some people have a connection or a resonance with the flight pod. Unfortunately for me, it doesn't. And when I look at it, I look at something that's very front heavy. So for me, if in my real worldness, I would say that the Cobra flight pod is essentially a baseball. The flight pack would take off and it would roll around like a forward spinning ball going towards an object. And with that, I don't foresee myself playing with it a lot because I'm a G.I. Joe collector. I have one, but I only have one and I don't have a desire for another one. The commonly missed components on this are the missiles, the dog bone for the steering. The other thing too is the gun in front, the cannon, is commonly bent like mine, just because when you store it on that gun and the gun, it tilts forward and it puts weight on the gun. So it tilts, eventually the barrel curves upwards. So those are some things to look out for. Of course, the canopy scratches easily and it's pretty sturdy. Otherwise, you know, the aerial mines get lost too, but roundabout, you know, when I was fixing this one up, you know, I looked and, you know, it's like a $50 vehicle and it has that price because of its iconic status in the cartoon. In the comic, I cannot think of one use in the Marvel series, in the IDW series, in the Devil's Due. I've read them all. There's nothing that stands out. So if I am wrong, please correct me by visiting my social media or, you know, sending me an email, chaplainjoepod@gmail.com. Be more than happy to be corrected on this because for me, after the cartoon ended, I'm not going to call it a dark period, but I had a period where I didn't do anything until from 87 to 1991 when I discovered the comics. You know, I didn't like the Deke cartoon, or it was on USA Network, and I didn't really watch it because usually I was at school or I was coming home from school at the time, so I couldn't watch it. I didn't really, because I didn't have one as a kid, and because by the time I got to the comic in 91 and the comic informed my play, this doesn't have a lot of resonance with me personally. Now, displayability, it's small. You have a collection of figures and you want small vehicles, this fits right in. It's perfect for that. So maybe you don't want to display a Crimson Cad or a Hiss on your shelves, but this fits in with your 3¾ figures that are all standing up on stands. So it's very easy to collect it. It's very easy to display it. So I'm going to give this, and this is going to be kind of low for myself, but this is my rating. If you don't like my rating, that's fine too. You can, again, write back to me. So how many out of 0 to 5 mini cannons, one XM-97 mini cannons this gets? I'm going to give this a 4 one XM-97 mini cannons. So 4 cannons out of 5. What hurt this the most for me is my own personal resonance. It's easily collectible. It's easily displayable. It is a huge part of the cartoon, the Sunbow series. So for that, that really, really ranks it high. It's a sturdy little toy. The physics are wrong for me, and no childhood memories of this. So that just what knocks it down a point. But I understand why a lot of people like these, and I understand their overall importance to the G.I. Joe mythos. Now, before I go away, I would like to talk a little bit and potentially my last classified review, as I have stopped buying classifieds for a lot of reasons, which I'll get into potentially on another podcast. But the last thing I would like to talk about is the Cobra Televiper and Cobra Flight Pod Trouble Bubble number 79 from the G.I. Joe classified series, and just talk a little bit about that. Now, the Cobra Televiper was designed by Ron Rudat for 1985 as well. And because it featured on the box art for the Flight Pod, when the classified series decided to do the Televiper, they made it the Televiper Cobra Flight Pod combo pack. The one thing that I will say about the Cobra Televiper was it was kind of forward thinking in 1985 with the camera gun, when everybody's running around with very expensive VCR recorders on their shoulder, low budget movies and stuff, and rich people. It was very forward thinking with the silver visor, the dual mouthpieces coming down. It was a very forward thinking figure in 1985. Now, one of the things with classifieds is, the upscaling and modernization of the characters. And, we have the classified Televiper. And my biggest criticism of the Televiper is the fact that it really wasn't updated at all. Other than the switchable heads, where you have the Caucasian head, you have the African American head, and then you have the visored head, where everything is obscured except for like some, night vision goggle type things or VR type goggles. It's really a huge retread of the 1985 figure with no updates. And the biggest thing that hurts it, and I'm not going to say that the design overall isn't bad, it's the fact that we're still laden with the camera gun and the backpack. I don't mind the backpack so much, but the camera gun has just got to go. With technology being what it is, where everybody has a cellular connection and doing things on their phone. And even then you have satellite phones, which still are a lot smaller. Because of that, if you're doing a huge retro collection, this fits right in. But for something that wasn't a retro carded figure or offering, I think that kind of makes it not worth the money. Because again, as I look at new toys and I look at new things to add to my G.I. Joe collection, I'm looking for things moving forward. Now, the neat thing about the classified trouble bubble is the fact that with the upscaling came opportunities for much more intense detailing and features than over the original 1985 3¾-inch release. Most notably is now it has seat belts, the handlebar laser sight, infrared sight, has a red painting applique, and overall the paint apps on this are phenomenal, adding grays and blacks onto the off-white exterior, making it truly look like a finished and completed toy. The Cobra sigils and the danger, you know, everything that was a sticker on the original is now painted. The bubble itself now has almost like a heads-up display for the Televiper or whatever character to look out of, complete with a Cobra logo on the bottom, because as we know, branding is everything in the Cobra hierarchy. The cockpit itself has painted details and even like little displays. It is a fully realized version of the 1985 toy. The features are exactly the same. Flip up top, steerable rudders on the bottom. But the big thing is now the machine gun on the bottom is much more detailed, but also on a ball joint. So the ball joint allows it to go up, down, left, right, all sorts of directions without needing the character to pull back or push forward on the control stick. The handlebars turn as they should. No surprise there. Another thing too is the console can move forward further than on the 1985 one. The 85 one might move all the way forward, but I'm afraid of doing that because I'm afraid it's going to break. Overall, you know, the missiles, you know, are on plug-in pegs. It's just a much more complete experience, and it benefits greatly from being upscaled. The only caveats I have on this is I have a stress mark for the ball joint on the bottom of the gun. You know, when I put it in there, it stressed. Don't think it was supposed to do that, but it did anyway. And also, when I pull the missiles off to launch them, the stanchions come off the body rather than the missile coming off the dog bone. And one last thing to look at the classified trouble bubble is the aerial mine. And for some inexplicable reason, probably because of just common sense, is they made it smaller than the original version. So I'm not sure how that works out, that the aerial mine gets smaller as the figures get bigger, but it does. It's a smaller version complete with a removable panel. It still has the stickers and stuff on it, now painted, of course. And the other big thing is there's just no place to put it on the trouble bubble itself. I don't know what they intend to do with the aerial mine, other than maybe it sits in the character's lap. Not sure, but it's there, and it really didn't do much for me in the 3¾ version. So having it as a loose accessory for the 6-inch version doesn't affect me either way, other than the fact that it's just something that is able to get lost. The only other thing I would say is I have the clear stands from Hasbro Pulse. One of them is currently being used to hold up a Locust in my Camp Jellystone display. This really needs a clear stand to elevate it off the battlefield. Other than that, it really is a solid buy. Is it worth the $45 retail? I would say so, considering that, you know, with a 6-inch figure being $25, is the trouble bubble worth another $20 in classified scale? I would say so. It is solid. I like it. You know, if I was more of a classified guy, I would be clamoring to keep this. Now, to put it in perspective, where I am, the Targets are littered with the Python Patrol versions. I was lucky enough to get this original release off of Hasbro Pulse when it was originally offered, because I know this is going to be something that's going to be sought after And for whatever reason, the Python Patrol subsets aren't as sought after as the original releases. So if you're not set on having this original release, I would say give it a couple months and you should be able to pick up a Python Patrol, Televiper, and Trouble Bubble pretty cheap. Overall, it is a solid little vehicle for the classified line. Well, that concludes this Missile for the Masses. I've been your host, Gary, and thank you for listening if you've gotten this far. For more Chaplain's Assistant Mortar Pod, you can find me on social media at Chaplain Joe Pod on all the social media channels. And also, if you would like to write an email, you can go to chaplainjoepod@gmail.com. The Chaplain's Assistant Mortar Pod can be found on all major podcatchers. And if you're listening on Spotify, my host, you can also interact with the podcast by answering the question or responding to the poll that will accompany this podcast. And also, it doesn't hurt wherever you listen to the Chaplain's Assistant Mortar Pod to rate and review it, as it only helps to grow and improve this podcast. The Chaplain's Assistant Mortar Pod is the strange, but not a strange, nerdy little brother of the Pint of Pop Culture Podcast. And I don't say that because they have a Televiper spying on me. Now, with all of that out of the way, one final missile for the masses: be decent to each other.